This is Dialogue Conspiracy. Political research specialist Mae Brussel, whose conspiracy newsletter appears in the Realist magazine, has for 3 years shared with our listeners the fruits of her decades' research into political assassinations and the abuses of power in America. Her weekly commentary relates the news of the week to the evidence emerging about the conspiracy, which allegedly maintains its power by force over America's electoral and executive processes. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. It's April 8th in Carmel, California, 1974. There's so much in the news. I always take a deep breath before we get into it because it's hard to cover in 45 minutes the week's news as it pertains to conspiracies. I sit down with the front page of one paper and tear it into about 8 different columns and shreds, just a file, and now with 8 papers a day, it's overwhelming, but we'll push on. We'll get on with the show. First, I want to announce, remind you that April 21st, 2 weeks from last Sunday, I'll be up at San Jose Civic Auditorium. There are a lot of people that listen to the show that can't get into the college class that I have once a week now at MPC that aren't around that want to ask questions personally. This is called Dialogue Conspiracy, but it's one way unless you write me a letter and I answer your letter. So if you come to San Jose Auditorium at 1:30 on Sunday, we made it a long time, so if you have questions, I'll stay over and answer them. I'll talk for about an hour, 45 minutes on the nature of conspiracies, and then I'll answer questions on specific conspiracies like the San Francisco violences, Patricia Hearst, John Kennedy, the Manson killings, the Charles Watson, who actually did the killings of Sharon Tate and LaBianca, and any questions on Chappaquiddick. We'll fit them into a pattern of how conspiracies are designed and who's behind them, and I'll take any of your questions and answer them in the time allowed that are on your mind about where these particular conspiracies fit and who is behind them. So that's April 21st at 1974, San Jose Civic Auditorium. You can get your tickets, Top Hat tickets, up in San Jose or the Bay Area or any Macy's box office if you call. They're $2.50 a seat, and they're on sale. You can order them through Macy's or the ticket services Sunday the 21st at 1:30. The news this week, of course, we're going to talk about the Patricia Hearst kidnapping again last week. For those who listened, I had a diagram breaking down the chain of command of that, what I call the Phoenix operation. It's a continuation of an espionage operation that we've done in many countries around the world, in Brazil, Greece, Cambodia, Laos, Argentina, South Korea, and Vietnam. It is a reign of terror on our streets, and the war has been brought home. The Hearst kidnapping is the most important event since in American history, as far as I can see, since the John Kennedy assassination. It is bringing the war home to the streets now that the leaders of the minorities have been killed or taken care of sufficiently that they are not in a position of power in politics. I gave briefly towards the end of the show a diagram naming the military contact agents of the Central Intelligence Agency that were in charge of the operation in contact with Donald DeFries. I just finished writing an article about him this week. I refer to him as the Black Lee Harvey Oswald, the scapegoat. There was an article about Donald DeFries for those who live in the Bay Area in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, a profile of him, and it exactly follows the kind of story they did of Lee Harvey Oswald, the broken home, didn't have a job. He was wandering around, no meaningful relationships, desperate, lost, aimless. These are the adjectives. Hard time finding a job. He was free from many, many arrests. It lists how many arrests he was could have been charged on and brought in. And then finally he was taken by the Los Angeles Police Department. And he was put in for a psychological examination where the adjustment, his social adjustment was disorganized, impaired. They suggested he had a schizoid personality with strong schizophrenic potential and suggested a 24-hour program of treatment. This poor black man patterned himself after the Prophet, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King. That is the cover story, the San Francisco Chronicle, as of April the 8th, by Tim Finley and Paul Avery. It's nothing but a phony. The relationship of DeFries to this story is as accurate as John Mitchell having a third-rate burglary at the Watergate Hotel at the time of the Watergate. This is not the story. Some of this is true. He was poor and he did wander from job to job. But the military part was that wanting an identity and being a black man in America, they put him into a psychological behavior modification program. And his military contact was Colston Westbrook, who came from Southeast Asia from the Phoenix program and the CIA to the prison to take over Donald DeFries and make him a patsy and get ready for the Hearst kidnapping. He was under the control of the military. I also mentioned last week the name of Christopher Thompson and another girl, Robin Steiner. And this week, Sin Q, who sent out a communique to the Hearst family and the news media, blamed these particular people for being agents of the FBI and the CIA. And Donald DeFries is evidently aware and not programmed enough to not be aware of the military contacts and the people that framed him, that told him he would be a hero. And now he's left with Patty Hearst and Thera Wheeler, and I feel that they will all be killed this week. And I'll tell you why. A lot of people think Patricia Hearst is dead. I think it's going to come down this week for several reasons. One other thing, this Robin Steiner, who was involved, she was living with Russell Little. They came out from Florida in 1972 and were in and out of our prisons. There was a quotation in the paper this week that she lives in constant fear and is living alone because she doesn't know who her friends are. She doesn't know who her friends are because she isn't a radical and she isn't a liberal, but she's a contact of the espionage establishment. And she'll get the same treatment that 99 other people got in Dallas and Miami that were associated with the John Kennedy assassination. They all were killed in some ways. Karate chops, hanging in the jail, automobile accidents, heart attacks, a whole group that had anything to do with the actual espionage operation of killing John Kennedy. The connecting links, if the trial were to open again, have been murdered, and there are about 99 of them at the present time. Now, this is a very difficult week for me. I very seldom get emotionally involved in my research where I get excited physically or mentally, get upset. But everything is coming in so fast on the Hearst script that it's very hard for me to concentrate or even visualize that we could have a radio show, say, 3 weeks from now. As far as I can see, I made predictions on the Robert Kennedy assassination, the Ted Kennedy accident at Chappaquiddick, the Wallace killing. So I'm going in for my fourth big prediction, and on the basis of this, I'm going to say what I think could possibly take place in the next 4 weeks and why I come to those conclusions. And I hope people that are listening have tape recorders or take time out and take your tape cassette and take your pencils and listen. And I'm going to go very slow because I could see that in 4 weeks from now, there would be a chance that stations like KLRB would not be having Dialogue Conspiracy, that the airwaves would be as controlled as Chile or Greece or Vietnam. And there is a possibility, the way I see it, for that martial law plan to go into effect in 4 weeks. And I base that upon five statements. I'll read them to you. I gave a press release to somebody who called me today from New York City. It'll be in print in various committee groups that will get it out in New York, also in San Francisco. And I'm giving it to you on KLRB, and I'll be sending this around the country as fast as I can. Mayor Alioto, the mayor of San Francisco, had a press conference this week, April the 5th, and he said the following. Mayor Joseph Alioto said at a press conference that he hinted there was a possible relationship between the Patricia Hearst kidnapping and the city's recent wave of random slayings. 11 persons, he said, have been shot to death and 4 seriously wounded, apparently without motive. These have been called our senseless, motiveless crimes that I've been talking about on KLRB since last January. Asked directly about the status of the police investigation into the street killing, Alioto said, "We'll have something to say about that and the related subject matter next week, depending on the resolution of the Hearst case. I'm going to respect the request," the mayor said, "of the Hearst family. But the moment the Hearst matter is resolved, I'm going to have a lot to say on that subject." End quote. Now, he said he'll have a lot depending on the resolution of the Hearst case.
And the killings up in the Bay Area were called the Zombie, Motiveless, Senseless. They were described as a cult, and it was called Operation Zebra, Black, White, to start a race war. And there were not 11 deaths. There, I counting the Santa Cruz murders up and down this coast, and the Stanford killings, and the killing of Chuck Taylor's daughter a few weeks ago, and the murders in Oakland, or the boy in front of the church whose skull was crashed in. There are about 60 of these deaths in the last few months, and the purpose of them, they're run by the police department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It's the Phoenix Operation, and they are not motiveless at all. Now, in the research of the Warren Commission, when they were writing the Warren Report, Bert Griffin, an attorney for the Warren Commission, wrote to Howard Willens, another attorney, and I have a copy of his letter dated August 14, 1964. This is 1 month before the Warren Report was to be published in September 64, and they were writing the Chapter 6 on whether or not there was a conspiracy that Jack Ruby was assisted in killing Lee Harvey Oswald in the Dallas jail, because Lee Harvey Oswald was the patsy of the John Kennedy assassination, like Donald DeFries is our black patsy in the San Francisco killing when the Patricia Hearst murder takes place. Mr. Griffin wrote to Howard Willens, and he said this regarding the preface and the conclusion of the Warren Commission report: we have found no evidence that anyone assisted Jack Ruby in the shooting of Oswald. Certainly, we can't say that, because it is insufficient evidence to conclude that any one particular person assisted Ruby. Nevertheless, we have not conducted an investigation that would effectively exhaust the possibilities that somebody did assist Ruby. Inasmuch as Ruby is still alive and will continue to dicker concerning his fate, it is a mistake for the Warren Commission to make a statement to indicate its investigation had been exhaustive. I would simply state the facts we have uncovered and remain silent on the issue of whether anybody not connected with the assassination of the president could have assisted Ruby. I do not think our investigation into the question of whether or not there was a conceivable tie between Ruby and the assassination is adequate to conclude there was no tie-in. But to make further suggestion no one aided or encouraged Ruby is a risk we cannot incur. As long as Ruby was alive and the report was going out in a month, and Ruby was dickering for his fate, which he begged Earl Warren to protect him so he could tell what happened, he was dickering for his fate, they couldn't say conclusively that nobody aided Jack Ruby to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. So the Warren Report says that as far as they investigated, they found no evidence, because by their own admission, they didn't investigate it. But Mayor Alioto said, depending on the resolution of the Hearst case, he'll have plenty to say later. Now, Attorney General Evel Younger is remaining very silent in the entire Hearst case. Our governor has come out and suggested that the poor should have received poisoning, botulism in their food. But Evel Younger, who has been named as a defendant in a lawsuit to hide the investigation of the Robert Kennedy assassination, the one that Mr. Noguchi, the coroner, is talking about, if you heard the news 10 minutes ago, a defendant in the case to cover up who killed Robert Kennedy was Evel Younger, the Attorney General of California. The suit was placed by Theodore Chirac in the courts in Los Angeles. And Evel Younger was named by Louis Tackwood in the Glass House tapes as working with the Los Angeles Police Department, the same police department that wanted Tackwood to hire radicals that would kill a president and congressman at the 72 convention in San Diego. He claimed that the attorney general is tied to the national police force inside the White House, the military, that want to take over the government. And Evel Younger is being strangely silent about the Hearst case, although he's tied directly to the Watergate teams and the task forces that would create the martial law plan. And because James McCord is on that 16-man unit, emergency contingency unit, of rounding up radicals, and that's been kept out of the entire Watergate investigation completely, it means the whole unit is still intact and ready to go on the martial law. So, and Mr. Saxby, the Attorney General in Washington, came out this week, and what were the headlines of April 1st to 8th since we met this last week? I cut 7 headlines, not the full articles. One says, Saxby's theory international terrorists. And he's going to link the phony kidnapping of Princess Anne, the Shah of Iran, the abduction of diplomats in Ethiopia, Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Sweden, and so forth, to the Patricia Hearst kidnapping. He's getting out the old files, the scapegoats, from the early un-American activities that Elliot Richardson was ready to throw away if he were the Attorney General. And that could be why Richardson was fired. It may not have been the White House tapes at all. It may have been because they wanted to keep the list of old radicals active and the martial law in plan, which they couldn't do with Richardson if he was going to throw this list away. Other headlines this week said Ethiopia guerrillas kidnapped 5 oilmen. Another one, perils of terrorists. They could have small nuclear bombs and blackmail. Another, the headline, William Saxby says, we're getting out the old subversive list. There's another headline, burglary is the growing American occupation. Another headline, kidnapping terror spreads in the U.S. Another headline, Mrs. Clark Gable was told by the LAPD that somebody wanted to kidnap her baby. Now, that was 14 years ago. The kid is 14 years old. But this week it makes a headline, the Los Angeles Police Department told her that someone wanted to kidnap her baby. Another headline, private guards have been doubled around the clock for the Onassis family. Another headline, crime casts its shadow across paradise, which was a provocateur series of killings down at St. Croix in December of 73. Then there was another one, looking for scapegoats, the devil gets his due, and it goes into the belief in the devil with all the stress, and we'll go into that soon. Well, what we have here is Mayor Alioto hinting that next week, depending on the resolution of the case, I'm going to have a lot to say on the subject. You have the Attorney General saying I have a lot to say on the subject, and then you have the Hearst family told to go to Mexico for a vacation and forget themselves. Now, in this week, we get all the scare tactics of linking the terrorist group, which never was heard of before, to terrorist groups all over the world. Then we get Mayor Alioto saying he's going to link all these program zombies, which have been in military hospitals in Hawaii and in California, that were programmed to do this killing through behavior modification and surgical implants of electrodes to do the murders, who no longer have their memories of how they did them, to spread the terror and to be attached to the Hearst kidnapping. Now, here is the important thing. If Patricia Hearst and the two black men who were at behavior modification at Vacaville were killed on the guise of protecting them, they would come in and shoot them or come in and find them dead or could even kill them and say they were dead when they arrived. On the guise of that, this next week, Alioto is expecting something to happen, after which he'll make his announcement. But the next week later, April 19th to 20th, Governor Ronald Reagan, Senator James Buckley, and Vice President Gerald Ford are going to be in San Jose, California. Now, Buckley's brother, William Buckley, is using the media through all these assassinations and conspiracies. Buckley's brother is the well-known writer who has columns going all over the country and works for the Central Intelligence Agency. Vice President Ford and Ronald Reagan and Mr. Buckley are going to be in San Jose. San Jose is a city filled with provocateurs that staged a phony rock throwing at Richard Nixon that came out at the time the people in San Jose asked for an investigation of this. It was a provocateur thing so Richard Nixon could talk about violence in California. They have the machinery, the police state, the agents to stage a killing or 3 killings in San Jose in 2 weeks from now. If Patricia Hearst and DeFries are killed this week, the following week, then Alioto and Younger come out and have plenty to say about the blacks, the whites, the Chicanos. They'll cut off letters into the prison. They'll blame these do-gooders who were CIA agents for coming into the prison. They'll blame the radical prisoners for having friends. They'll cut off the visitation of the prisoners. They'll cut off the letters to prisoners. And it will become Auschwitz and Dachau and become more secretive. But killing public officials was planned for San Diego for 1972, killing congressmen, newspaper men, even the president. So how do we know that the Tackwood allegations are not going to be put into effect in San Jose? And I think it is important for as many people to know this as possible, that if any one or all 3 of these people are killed, that will be the excuse for Richard Nixon to end impeachment investigations, to have martial law. It would clear the way for John Conley and Rockefeller. There's a power struggle, you see, at the top between Connolly representing the Southern oil people and Rockefeller the Northern oil people. There's a big struggle of power going on with four eligible Republicans: John Connolly, John Rockefeller, Ronald Reagan, and Gerald Ford. And if two of them were wiped out in San Jose, it would still leave two holding the power that they want. And it was also blame it on the radicals who are connected to all of these zombie killings, with no proof that one of them has been involved or that any black man that was involved in Operation Zebra hasn't had behavior modification. You see, the question is, Mr. Hearst comes out, and one minute he's a liberal and one minute he's a racist. He came out this week and he was asked, do you think Patty's a liberal? And he made the remark, I hope she is. It's time that we had liberal ideas, not radical ideas. I think it's about time we looked at our so-called minorities as assets instead of liabilities. I think until that happens, we're going to have a great deal of social troubles. And he sounds far out. You say, is that Hearst talking? Who would say a thing like that? But then the next day, he speaks about the treatment that Patty got when the communique came out that she was staying with them, and she called her father a liar, a corporate liar. And Mr. Hearst says, that's just plain cruelty. He said, I think they are just cruel. I think they fundamentally hate society so much they think anything's fair. He said he thought he could deal with the SLA. I guessed wrong on the SLA all along, he said. I think they were going to keep their promise, and they didn't. This is the San Francisco Chronicle, April the 8th. They. It reminds me of every other racist monger who talks about a Jew or a black. I did this. I gave her an old dress. They don't thank you. I put out some lunch. They don't eat what you want them to eat. I've heard they all of my lifetime from people who are prejudiced and racist, and it comes out every time they open their mouth. The theys come out. Mr. Hearst knows, if he lives in the state of California, that Vacaville wanted 48,000 new electrodes into prisoners' brains. He knows that they do behavior modification there. Can't he ask? Everybody's saying, was Patricia Hearst brainwashed? Nobody says, was Donald DeFreeze brainwashed? What did they do to DeFreeze? He doesn't say, is the FBI behind this? Does the CIA do brainwashing? The man doesn't live in an empty void. I have an article here by Victor Marchetti, who was with the CIA 16 years, and he quit the CIA, and he has a lawsuit now to expose, you know, his books on the CIA. And he came out with an article in February 72, and one reason he left the CIA is that he says that they're talking now. There's discussions. This is a direct quote. I know they're being discussed in the halls of the CIA to take over the intelligence community in the United States, that they have lists on people, and they were already targeting in on groups in this country. And there's a lot of people who feel this should be done. He said these people, his CIA people, not black prisoners, these people are super patriots. But you've got to remember, too, they're amoral. These are his buddies of 16 years. They're amoral. They're not immoral. They're amoral. Most things, he said, are right or wrong to us. Most people are honorable men. They're good or evil. Moral, immoral. But the nature of intelligence is that you do things because they have to be done, whether it's right or wrong, and you murder. Now, Marchetti talked about the dark arts of clandestine military operations, and one of the things the CIA clandestine people do, he said, is to start wars. They start private wars in countries clandestinely, and they make it look as if it's something the local yokels decided to do themselves. He says the United States began fighting in Vietnam on this basis. The CIA is running a $450 million year operation. The CIA overthrew, he talks about the overthrowing of Diem and Chinook in Cambodia and other countries in the Southeast Asia. And he said, we're sending agents into South America, India, Africa, Philippines, all placing social upheaval in these various countries wherever they go. The CIA has a big depot in the Midwest United States where they have all kinds of military equipment and all kinds of unmarked weapons. And over the years, they bought everything they could get their hands all over the world that is untraceable. That's why when Lawrence Kwong from a mental hospital in San Francisco shoots Ben Munson, a KGO, and then kills himself and has told a detective he was programmed to do it, the gun is untraceable. Sirhan's gun, the one that shot Robert Kennedy, is gone. They come from a depot of guns that change hands over and again. And Marchetti left the CIA and wants to expose it because of their immorality and their murder, and he says they're planning to act in the United States. Another agent, Hans Tuff, that I've talked to before on my shows, in 1966 quit the CIA, and he said if this agency is permitted to operate in this arbitrary fashion within the continental limits of the United States, the rights of all American citizens are in jeopardy. This is what Hans Tuff said, and he fought against the Nazis in Europe. He came to this country. He's a 55-year-old Danish-born agent who began his intelligence work in the anti-Nazi underground in World War II and came to the United States, and he said, we are in danger from an invisible government. Hans Tuff said in 1966, the CIA has operated in a manner beyond the law of the land. He's not talking about what we do overseas, but here. He has answered none of his questions regarding their highly questionable operations. The question of security that served as the cover for the amateurish raid into his private home was absurd in light of agency practices and the contents of classified material. And he warned that the continental United States was in jeopardy if we didn't stop them. So when Mr. William Colby was appointed the head of the CIA by the Senate this summer, a vote like 83-17, the operation, that was the go-ahead for him to come home from a program where people were thrown out of aeroplanes in Vietnam, 40,000 people put in prisons, tiger cages, villages massacred. These were CIA operations. This is what you have in the Bay Area in San Francisco. And don't put it past them if they could be behind the killing of Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy, Martin Luther King. They will kill their own of the ruling class like Patricia Hearst or Ronald Reagan or Gerald Ford or James Buckley at a conference to get what they've been planning to get for 20 years. Now, there's a man in Los Angeles, Baxter Ward, who announced that he's running. He's a Los Angeles County official. He announced that he's going to run for governor in California, a Democratic candidate, and that if he is elected, he would open the Sirhan case and the assassination of Robert Kennedy. This is the first person to run for office in the state of California on the basis of opening the Kennedy assassination. Baxter Ward said, this is in addition to the Noguchi news release today on the autopsy. Alioto said, he charged Alioto with being part of the mafia, but he goes on his other charge. Baxter Ward said, there's something that people have to answer to in the Los Angeles County about the Kennedy assassination that I've been asking daily since 1970. Someone is protecting a position or person. People in authority in Los Angeles County have conspired to prevent the reexamination. Ward said there's an angle of fire that is haywire, a distance of firing is haywire. The bullet test did not match the gun taken from Sirhan. And he wants to run for governor and open up this particular case. Now, there was a man who's been doing work on the Robert Kennedy assassination, Jack Kimbrough, who was in Carmel this last week, and he wants me to run for governor. He wants to put up a filing fee. It's too late to be on the ballot. It would be as an independent to run for governor of California. And some of the researchers said to me, well, if Baxter Ward is opening up the Robert Kennedy assassination in California, you won't have to run for governor because he will cover it. But if I decide to accept the filing fee and run for governor in this next election or attorney general, and I'll be filing in the next week or two if I decide to do it, I will run on the basis of opening up the case of the Sharon Tate LaBianca murders, the Robert Kennedy assassination, the Kemper murders up in Santa Cruz, Dr. Oda, the assassination up there, the Stanford killings, the San Francisco violences, the Patricia Hearst kidnapping, the Juan Corona, the framing of Juan Corona, the mass murders that have been taking place in California, the Isla Vista riots, and we will link them to the network of the police departments, the intelligence agencies, the Justice Department, and the White House, the assassination order that was to go out to kill Cesar Chavez from the Treasury Department, and the order to kill Eldridge Cleaver and bring him home dead in the box. All of these mass murders are contrived for what I think could culminate 3 weeks from now, and I have to briefly go into what is happening that makes me believe that this last desperate act could happen, because California seems to be where the police state was planned in 72, and it's moving along. The San Francisco Chronicle had an article this week, April the 5th. It read Quentin Chaplin at Knife's Point, and it went over the Associated Press in the San Jose Mercury. And this is the article. San Quentin's Protestant chaplain was held hostage with a crude knife at his throat yesterday in the third consecutive day of violence. The brief but tense drama at the prison chapel happened at 2 o'clock when inmate Vladimir Zatko, 28, grabbed Harry Howard, the chaplain. Zatko held a primitive 12-inch knife against the chaplain's throat, and 50 guards rushed to the scene. The chaplain resisted. There was a struggle. The chaplain fell to the floor. He appeared to be unhurt. The prison said they did not know if Zatko planned to use him as an escape attempt. Zatko is serving a prison 1 year to life on a second-degree robbery and has a psychiatric history. Now, who is Zatko? I have a copy of a letter of Vladimir Zatko, and I read it earlier on a radio program, I believe, but he made the headlines this week. Let's go into who he is. This letter is addressed to Honorable Judge Thomas McBride in California, and it is from Vladimir Zatko from the United States District Court for the Eastern District of California. Charles R. Newsom is filing for him as a plaintiff versus the President of the United States, Richard Nixon. And Newsom, who has found new evidence in the assassination of Robert Kennedy, has filed this for Vladimir Zatko to Honorable Judge McBride. And this is what the affidavit reads. It's dated September the 11th, 1973. I, Vladimir Zatko, citizen of Czechoslovakia, presently incarcerated at San Quentin State Prison, under an order of deportation rendered on August 28, 1973, by the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization, and personally known by defendant, in this case Richard Nixon. Two, Zatko, V.A. Zatko, has been under by two close associates instructed and ordered to murder one Sirhan Sirhan, presently incarcerated at San Quentin. The persons concerned are well known by defendant Nixon. They are involved in the Watergate affair, and their names shall be revealed to the court upon an appropriate order issued therein. Number three, Zatko has from defendant Nixon received an advance payment of $25,000, which sum of money is still untouched and deposited with a bank in the state of California and shall be presented as evidence to this court upon an order issued therein. Four, it should be noted that Zatko has on files in his residence in Beverly Hills, California, several letters written to him by E. Howard Hunt, also involved in the Watergate, as well as numerous other letters and papers and documents that would create circumstantial evidence that defendant Richard Nixon is connected with the assassination of the Kennedy brothers. Five, undoubtedly, only a proper investigation of this court of justice could bring the whole conspiracy to light. Zatko cannot and will not give any information or evidence except upon an order issued of immunity from prosecution granted to Vladimir Alexander Zatko. The deportation order should be declared unconstitutional. He should be taken from federal custody immediately, signed by Vladimir Zatko, and a copy was sent to the Russian Embassy in Washington, the New York Times, a Christian Science Monitor, and it was signed September the 11th, 1973. Now, I have another letter written by Zatko, a copy, part of a court order, signed, this is September the 20th, 1973. I, Vladimir Zatko, alien, deposed and duly sworn, it's notarized, say I have been on September the 28th in the state of California arrested, charged, and tried, convicted of robbery, sentenced to California Department of Corrections. Due to my poverty, I've been unable to employ a professional attorney and been deprived of basic rights. The said conviction resulted in the final order of deportation of my person from the United States of America as of August 28, 1973. I have not committed the alleged crimes for which I am imprisoned. I have not been in the U.S. on July 29, 1970, the date I was charged. I have, during this imprisonment, numerous times interrogated by the FBI, U.S. Secret Service, and other law enforcement agencies, state and federal. The agents have thereof tortured me, burned me with lighted cigarettes on my arms and marks and spots still visible. Beaten and sadistically humiliated, I have been by the same persons given applied hypodermic needle, various substances and drugs to cause me to partially or totally to lose control of my mind and free will and senses, and the atrocities committed result in paralysis, and my left leg have ruined my health. I do not presently have a healthy and sufficient recollection of what has all been inflicted upon my person during the imprisonment, especially when I was under the influence of those mentioned drugs. I bring this up because Sirhan was heavily drugged to forget after the shooting in the Ambassador Hotel. The people that had hired him as a decoy, well, Robert Kennedy was shot from the behind. He said, I can't remember what I may have said or done, written or signed at any particular moment during the interrogations. I cannot assume responsibility, and I will not, for my acts done while I was illegally deprived of my physical and mental faculties. Now, this is a certified letter of Zatko's, and I claim, and he says he has evidence to show that he was paid $25,000 to kill Sirhan. And I said that the San Francisco zombie killings, they do get injections of things to forget. Men are being programmed by the intelligence agencies and the Bureau to commit acts of violence and then forget what they did. And he said he's illegally deprived of his physical and medical faculties, and he can only partially remember what happens to him. Now, the important thing is this. I also have a copy of a letter from, allegedly, it's supposed to be from the warden, Nelson, up at San Quentin, saying that Zatko would meet with these particular people, FBI agents and Secret Service, because they'd ask for the prisoner, and he was taken off privately by them. But the Mr. Nelson complained that he was left bleeding and injured from those visitations, and he objected to the prisoner being hurt or bleeding. So that if this letter is accurate from Warden Nelson complaining of the treatment of Zatko in the prison, it would remind me of Joseph Romero and Little being taken by FBI men who have access to the California prison system and can carry people off and interrogate them or take them to see the death chamber and then take them to another room. Zatko claims that he has evidence that Richard Nixon knows it was part of the killing of the two Kennedy brothers. He wanted to get out of jail. He asked Justice McBride to do it. So maybe this altercation, the fact that he was with the chaplain and had this blade, shows that he was armed in some way. I also have a letter he sent out October the 14th saying, I'm again in possession of a 1 1/2 inch needle containing highly poisonous substance, the one I received on February 24th, 1973, prior to my confinement, in quotes, that he was sent up to San Quentin for this purpose. I believe you are in a position to arrange that I get transferred to any U.S. court or to Mr. Hansen, that's Sirhan's attorney. He's supposed to be representing Sirhan, but he will not keep Sirhan alive, this particular attorney, by checking into the Zatko matter. They're just letting it go out of hand. So the point is, the man may have had this phony altercation with the priest, so he'd be locked up and wouldn't have to kill Sirhan. And on the other hand, the prison may have had this skirmish with the priest so they could isolate him because he has let the information out that he's supposed to kill Sirhan, and the evidence of opening up the Robert Kennedy thing is blowing all up and down the state. Now, I think the martial law thing could go in effect, and I think that there could be these killings in San Jose on the 19th and 20th for the following reason. A government that has taken power illegally, who's usurped the processes and is being investigated at every front by the Congress and various lawyers, can't afford to investigate itself. And I note that in Pravda in 1971, they had an article that the truth about the Kennedy assassination wasn't told. And the same, about the same time, Chu and Lau had a Mexico City interview with a journalist called Julia Scher Garcia, in which he said the truth of Kennedy hadn't been revealed. It was after these two articles, one in Pravda and one in Mexico, that Richard Nixon said he was going to the Soviet Union and going to China. And I always felt that phony d'entente was a bargain in order to blackmail to get him to reach them instead of them coming to him. And now that the d'entente is being broken up and the strategic arms limitation talks are being sabotaged, it was very interesting that this week again Pravda came out with an article, the USSR came out with an article March the 18th saying the real truth behind the Kennedy assassination is locked up in the files of the FBI and CIA. And they went on to say that executive action, the movie and the book, is more authentic than the Warren Commission report. I think that the thing that they held over Richard Nixon, because he's in power at the time, were these particular assassinations. And if the d'entente is going to break, that Soviet Union and China will begin more telling about who killed Kennedy. But at the home front, you have a members of Congress, Congressman Gonzalez from Texas said that the committee is now investigating in Congress where the particular Watergate men were at the time John Kennedy was killed in Dallas, Texas. There was another a television interview this week, and Jesse Jackson, there was James Earl Ray talking about his prison conditions. But he also, he didn't say it on the media, it wouldn't have been allowed the time. He was talking about solitary confinement. But with his other press media and contacts in the last few weeks, James Earl Ray has been speaking up and said he didn't kill Martin Luther King and there was a conspiracy. Even at San Quentin, I take the San Quentin weekly newspaper, Executive Action, is showing at San Quentin this week, if you would believe it or not. And George Wallace spoke up the last few weeks and said there was a conspiracy to kill him, and he wants to know where Arthur Bremer got the money for airplane tickets and Waldorf Astoria and all the money that he was spending and his mobility and how he could stalk and know where Wallace was. The movie was made, The Second Gun, which was bought up and purchased. I heard a story last night that Theodore Chirac had one copy, and he showed it to a particular movie actor in Hollywood a few weeks ago, and Theodore Chirac produced the movie The Second Gun. And this actor was so excited, he said, come to my home, I want to talk about the movie, and they were pretty high, the excitement of seeing this movie, and he was very excited. And he asked Chirac to sleep at his house that night, and he had taken the film with him from the showing. And he said, this movie belongs to the world, it belongs to history, and they were excited. And the next morning, there was a gun at Chirac's head, and this actor said he was going to kill him. He wanted the film, and he was going to keep it. And he took the film away from Theodore Chirac, and all the other copies were bought up by Warner Brothers, and we were told we wouldn't see this movie in our lifetime. So Chirac left and called the sheriffs and police. They went to the movie star's home, and the copies of the film were buried 3 feet under the ground in the backyard of the estate of this movie actor. A real cloak and dagger story, but the desperation of taking the producer, a researcher of 5 years, and holding a gun to his head and taking those movies, bringing him home under the guise of friendship and then burying them in the dirt is the last available copies on the street. That was happening in Hollywood this week. Jim Garrison had an article in the Iconoclast, a Texas newspaper, and Mr. Sciamber, his aide, and they were saying that committees in Washington were looking into the John Kennedy assassination and something is going to break very soon. The news article went on to say that Garrison is continuing to get data on Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, the George Wallace shooting, and the quotation was, things are going to start opening up soon. Ted Kennedy is still the number one favorite for the Democratic Party. The polls indicate this. The accident at Chappaquiddick didn't put him out of the running for the next elections. I'm listing all the factors on why, in addition to the Watergate investigations and the tapes and the possibility that the White House team would go to prison like Ehrlichman or Haldeman, if you had the martial law, Charles Colson and all the espionage agents, those that would be in jail would be out, and there wouldn't be any such thing as putting them in prison. In addition to, as I say, putting all this terror that we have on the coast onto radical groups, linking it all together, it would be a wonderful way to come down on the radicals to try to end the kidnapping of various industrialists and people that have investments like the ITT and General Motors all over the world. The imperialism that we have, we would secure, or hopefully they would try to secure these positions for the business executives around the world by clamping down on the terrorist groups. They could tighten up the prisons, and we've gone into the labs for the last few weeks, and take care of mail, censorship of mail, and FM or AM stations. The news media would be cut off. The martial law could come into effect. It would stop the investigations, and it certainly would stop the investigations and all these assassinations. If a man is running for governor in the state of California on the basis of opening up just the Bobby Kennedy thing alone, that involves the attorney general, the governor of the state who wants to be president. You saw it in the paper this week, Senator Weicker has information of Lasswitz operation, Caulfield operation. It includes the name Ronald Reagan. Well, Reagan doesn't pay California taxes any more than Richard Nixon. So it's a time bomb. You see that the system is coming down, and these are little time bombs, that, because the next step is to say, well, what did they have on Reagan if they're bugging him, and isn't he one of the team? No, he's not one of the team. They're separate teams, and they work against each other. They work against us, but they also work against each other. So considering the Soviet Union is talking about the Kennedy assassination and a Baxter Ward is talking about this, the doctor did the autopsy, he's talking about Robert Kennedy, Jim Garrison is surfacing, Wallace is speaking up, movies like Executive Action, Second Gun, new movie coming out called Sirhan Sirhan, Ted Kennedy still up front. Add it all up, and how far can people go to exposing these multiple murders? Because we're not talking about wiretapping and bugging now. We're talking about cold-blooded murder of a few hundred people, and particularly Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King. So it when people begin to catch on to who's doing all these murders, would the murders investigate themselves? Hardly. And who do they want to think is doing all these killings in the Bay Area? Radicals. Blacks, Chicanos, Vince Ramos, investigators, they mentioned researchers, Nancy Ling Perry. So it was a perfect operation to stage, to have multiple killings come first, which were zombie CIA Phoenix operation programs, then kill Patricia Hearst and the Patsies, link the multiple killings, kill a few congressmen, and clamp down with martial law, get Richard Nixon off the hook, and have a state of siege where you have control of your airports and your streets. And I think that the script, I'm very depressed about the script. It's very clear in my mind how it can happen. The plans for it to happen in 72 were there. So as long as the same people in power now, why can't they do it in 74? So write this week letters about the San Jose Convention and put a thing that if any of these men are killed, the radicals didn't do it. And we're watching now to see that they don't do what would attack what he called the Squad 19 plans. I'm 1 minute over. I'll see you next week, I hope. We're on a week-to-week basis now, depending on what Alioto says. It's a week-to-week. So take care and read your paper and write some letters.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for over 10 years has been researching the facts behind the political assassinations in this country so that the truth may be revealed. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.